everybody. How are you today? Did we enjoy the lovely weather yesterday? It was heavenly, wasn't it? I mean, it was like a foretaste of glory divine. There's some kind of song about that. Spring's coming. That's good news. But we're here to talk about the good news of Jesus. So, we are in this teaching series called Stuck. It is our last week. We've been learning about the story of Joseph. And I want to do just a moment of fast forward with you. And the way this fast forward works is like this. Joseph, we've learned that his brothers stuck him in a cistern. He ended up on his way down to Egypt because they sold him to some Midianite traders. He ends up in the house of an official, and the official's wife chases him around. He ends up in prison, and after he's in prison, he's passed over for a promotion, and then his divine moment comes, and the Pharaoh has a dream that needs to be interpreted. And so Joseph is the man whom God had put there, and he's not only the man whom God had put there to interpret a dream, he's the man whom God put there with a plan. And so the idea is build all of these huge storehouse cities. Last week we talked about how do you be faithful with God's fortunes, how do you be a good steward of everything that God has given you. And then what happens from that point of the story forward is there's a bit of fast forward. 13 years passes by. From the time that Joseph is stuck to the time that he's going to meet his brothers for the first time in those 13 years as they've passed. And today we're going to read about that encounter when he sees those brothers. And we're going to consider the whole idea of revenge. Anybody else ever desired revenge at some point in their life? Okay, so we have a few honest people and all the rest are liars. All right, so... Let's read this morning. Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all his attendants, and he cried out, "Have everyone leave my presence." So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living?" But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come close to me." When they had done so, he said, "I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. Choose now, there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years, there will not be plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So then it was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me father to Pharaoh, lord of his entire household, and ruler of all Egypt. Now hurry back to my father and say to him, 'This is what your son Joseph says. God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, don't delay. You shall live in the region of Goshen and be near me, you, your children and grandchildren, your flocks and herds, and all you have. I will provide for you there because 5 years of famine are still to come. Otherwise, you and your household and all who belong to you will become destitute. You can see for yourselves, and so can my brother Benjamin, that it is really I who am speaking to you. Tell my father about all the honor accorded me in Egypt and about everything you have seen, and bring my father down here quickly.' Then he threw his arms around his brother Benjamin and wept, and Benjamin embraced him weeping. And he kissed all his brothers and wept over them. Afterward, his brothers talked with him." Have you ever had one of those relationships that starts out great? This is your BFF forever and ever and ever, and you know, this person, you just think that they're fantastic and everything about them excites you, and you can't wait to talk on the phone with them, or you can't wait to, you know, find out on Facebook what's happening with their life, and then all of a sudden, it just gets really toxic. And you realize that you're the one who's pouring into the relationship more than you receive. You realize that this person, the things that they want you to do or the things that they want you to say, They just bring the state of unease or the state of feeling like you got the creepy crawlies on the back of your neck or whatever you call it. It's just toxic. And over time, it just keeps getting more and more toxic to where you begin to think about all of the hurt and the pain in your life. And at some point, maybe even you want to pray that you never met that person or you want revenge. Anybody here ever wanted revenge before? We're getting slightly more honest this morning. Yeah, I mean, look, we've all wanted revenge at some point. I don't care if you're Johnny or Susie Good Christian. Everybody has wanted revenge at some point because one of the most natural things in life is that when somebody hurts you, you want to hurt them, right? Hey, you hurt me, dude, and so I would like you to feel at least a decent proportion of the amount that I hurt so you can enjoy that for yourself. I mean, this is the reason why people fight wars. This is why we have the political battles we do, not only in our culture, but all throughout civilization. This is, you can watch this play out on elementary school playgrounds starting in about kindergarten. Revenge. It just gets more complicated and complex the longer it goes. One of the great examples of the desire for revenge in our culture over the last 20 years or so might be that of Tanya Brown. Tanya Brown, you might remember, was the sister to the late Nicole Brown Simpson. And, you know, you watched that whole trial, and it was the first trial in United States history that played out on media in a way that had never been experienced before. And you watched Tanya, you watched her family go through thousands of hours upon hours of sitting in that courtroom and hearing the case and all of these kinds of things and all of these great one-liners like, you know, if the gloves do not fit, you must acquit, and all of this kind of stuff. And I remember I was sitting there, I was in college, and watching the verdict come in. And, you know, the verdict was important, obviously, but I remember watching the family when the verdict came in and watching just how hurt and angry and you could just see the pain on their face. And what's interesting about the case, and the reason why I want to point to it this morning, is not so much the case itself. Obviously, the case is filled with all kinds of interesting things. But Tanya was filled with this desire to gain revenge, with this venom and hatred in her heart. And it literally drove her until she was ill. I mean, sad. I mean, people love revenge. They do. They love to settle the score. And there's sort of this, when it happens to you, there's this almost Gordon Gekko-ish type desire. We say, I'm going to bury that person. That used to be my favorite one-liner. You know, I'm going to get revenge. They try to put me and my family out on the street. I'm going to do that to them. You just use different words to do it. Maybe it's, I'm going to get them. Or just wait and see. Now, maybe that has a little softer side to it, but I guarantee you, revenge, filled with revenge, or just wait, because what goes around comes around. No revenge in that one, right? I mean, we have all of these sort of one-liners that are filled with all kinds of revenge-type motives. You know, it's interesting, our culture tends to function as if karma is more true than grace. Doesn't it? I mean, if I were to ask people, like, don't you want, you know, sort of the good that you do to come back to you? Oh, man, I'm in. And don't you want, like, the bad that other people do to come back to them? Oh, man, I'm in. And wouldn't you like the bad that you do to come back to you? No, I like grace. I mean, we tend to function as if karma is true. In fact, it's on a bumper sticker. How does it go? Karma, it's a real bummer or something like that. Now, I don't believe in karma, but I confess, as a guy who loves to play hockey, I love the Old Testament line that says eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. It's very fitting for hockey, yes? The tooth for a tooth, I suppose, especially. But where does this whole thing come from? I mean, because we don't find it in the Ten Commandments or anything like that. So where do we get it from? Well, I mean, if we look at Leviticus, it's pretty clear in the Old Testament that revenge is not supposed to be something that we seek. God says, do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against one of your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. And just so you know, it's not an Old Testament thing. It's a New Testament thing. We read, do not take revenge, my friends, but leave room for God's wrath, for it is written, it is mine to avenge. I will repay, says the Lord. You want to look at the Gospels. Jesus says things like, turn the other cheek. And if a man sues you for your cloak, give him your tunic as well. And so that's where today starts, with this powerful choice. When Joseph's brothers come and seek him for grain, they don't even recognize him. In that moment, will he gain revenge or will he give God glory? Will he gain revenge or will he give God glory? And I think the same is true for us. When the time comes that we can use our power, our influence, our authority, our resources, all of those kinds of things, will we gain revenge over those who have hurt us? Or we seek to give God glory for the way that he's used these difficult, painful circumstances in our lives to shape us and mold us? Because I guarantee you, one path will lead you back to being stuck, and the other will lead you forward into God's purposes for your life. We have the joy of celebrating a baptism this morning, and so I want to ask Maddie Rash, as well as her family, to come on up, and let's celebrate this baptism. And here at Revolution, we baptize people of all ages. We baptize from infants all the way on up to adults. And so the baptism that we're seeking for Maddie today is a baptism that precedes something that we call confirmation. And so what we're asking is the grace of God to be active and working in this little girl's life until she comes to a place in which she's ready to make her public profession of faith here before all of you. And as we celebrate this baptism today, I want you to realize this isn't just a family making a decision. This is about a church family making a promise. Say the word promise.
Promise.
Promise. And the promise is that you are going to help Maddie and you are going to help Maddie's family raise and train her in the Christian faith. And that you're going to help this child and be used of God and be used by the grace of God to help this child come to a decision of faith herself. And so this isn't just about Maddie today. This is about her church family. And I want you to realize you're a part of this. We could do that, I know. And you know what's funny is there's no South Detroit.
I know.
Yeah, South Detroit's in the river. I didn't know if you knew that, but that's completely off topic. We'll get back on topic. It is a journey. I mean, that's what life is. I like it. So the last 2 weeks, come back around. The last 2 weeks, we saw Joseph's divine moment come. We've talked about interpretation of dreams. We've talked about years of abundance. And now the famine strikes. I know. There's sort of a organ music deal when all that comes, toccata and fugue or what have you. Anyway, it comes. The famine comes. And when the famine comes, I want you to realize, folks, this isn't just Egypt that's involved. This is the whole ancient world. And so for a time, yes, the Egyptians, they're coming to Joseph. They're looking for grain. They're looking for supplies, this kind of thing. And eventually, as the surrounding area runs out of supplies, the whole ancient world is coming to Egypt. Because that's how it works, right? Good news travels fast. Hey, there's grain down in Egypt. We know that there's this guy, Joseph. If you go before him and you explain to him your needs, he will be ready to supply them. And it's been 13 years since his brothers have seen him. And now imagine that for a minute. So for 13 years, these brothers have been keeping up the appearance that their brother is dead. They've been telling their father, Jacob, the same story. Hey, your son, Joseph, he's dead. A ravenous pack of wolves. It was ugly. We were really glad that you weren't there. It was horrible. They haven't seen him. They kind of always had to wonder, you know, what happened to Joseph? Where did he go? This sort of thing. 13 years later, because they're without food, because the famine's on in Israel. They make their way down to Egypt and they meet Joseph for the first time. And when they meet him, they don't even recognize him. Not surprising, because you have to remember that Joseph would have taken on the appearance, more Egyptian-like appearance, right? He would have shaved his head. We read about that last week. He would have had Egyptian dress. 13 years is a long time. The difference between 17 and 30, sure, maybe you look a little bit alike, but not exactly the same. And so they see a Joseph for the first time, and they can't recognize him. Joseph clearly knows who they are. And Joseph's brother, Benjamin, now this would have been a brother by blood, born to the same mother, Rachel. He gives Benjamin five times the amount of food at the dinner table. So it's good to be Benjamin, right? And when it's all over, he loads him up with supplies to head back to Israel. And he's put a silver cup inside Benjamin, one of his feed sacks. And he pulls it out and he says, I cannot believe, you know, you treat me this way. This is treacherous, what have you. I'm going to keep Benjamin here as my slave. And that's when something different and unexpected happens. One of the brothers, Judah, says, no, take me instead. Now, 13 years before, do you think Judah would have done that? Not a chance. I mean, they were busy selling little brother down the river. He was done. But 13 years later, no, take my place. I'll take my brother's place, rather. Something's changed. You know, sometimes if we look past our own desires for vengeance and revenge, we can see the power of God at work. And I think Joseph began to see that the power of God had been at work in his brother's lives. So in time, what happens is the brothers head back to Israel. They offload the supplies. They tell their father Jacob what's happened. Jacob is super upset because now he's about to lose another son named Benjamin. And it's just as bad, if not worse, because he's going to be a slave down in Egypt. So he sends him back and they go and see Joseph. And when Joseph sees them, he realizes, I think, in that moment that he holds their lives, his brother's lives, literally in the palm of his hands. And that this whole vision of his brothers bowing down to him had just come to pass. They need supplies. He has a younger brother of theirs in custody. In this moment, he could either throw him in prison. He could send him back to Israel with no food and say, Israel's cut off forever. We're just going to let him die and they deserve it because this is what they've done to me. He could kill him. I mean, he has all of these potential options. He holds their lives in the palm of his hands. And instead, what does he do? He weeps. He weeps. And then he reveals himself to his brothers. Can you imagine what that moment was like? This guy you thought was dead for 13 years now stands before you alive. This guy you sold off 13 years before. Hey, what happened to Joseph? I don't know. Got to keep up appearances. Now stands before you and your life is literally in the palm of his hands. The scriptures say that the brothers were literally breathless. You ever been breathless before? Not in a football or hockey kind of way where you get the wind knocked out of you, but you're literally breathless. You don't know what to say or do. Your heart skips a beat for a moment. It reminds me of another story. It happens on Easter Sunday. The women go running to the tomb. Because ladies are always first up, right? You want it done. You talk to the gals. So they run to the tomb. And they expect that Jesus is going to be there dead. But the stone's been rolled away, and it leaves them, to a certain degree, breathless. And so Peter and John, they come running to the tomb. I imagine they were out of breath, and they look in, and they see the strips of linen lying there, and they're breathless. What do we make of this? And later that evening, the disciples, they're all locked in a big room. And they're worried because, hey, the revolution has ended and they should be the ones to die next. And Jesus comes and stands before them. They're completely shocked and breathless. And what does Jesus say? Peace. And now that they're out of their own breath, what does he do? Fills them with new breath. The breath of the Holy Spirit. Powerful. powerful. Joseph says to them, come close to me. The victim reaches out to the offender. Kind of like peace. You were the ones who sent me to my death. You were the ones who abandoned me 3 days ago on a cross. Peace be with you. You know, folks, revenge is a life and death question. Don't think of it that often that way, but it is. It's a life and death kind of question. You can either leave your revenge at the doorstep and open the door and ask God to move and be at work in your life, or you can stay consumed with this desire for revenge and stay stuck in this cycle of death. It's a very, very simple question. I mean, you open the door, and I've seen marriages healed this way. I've watched people leave a meeting free for the first time in years because of something that's happened in their past. No longer does it weigh upon them anymore. You sort of watch people's eyes get lighter. You watch their faces, the color comes back to their cheeks. Instead of walking around with their head down all the time, for the first time, they raise up and they recognize that they're not who they were. They're a new kind of creation, as Paul calls it. All because of what? They've opened the door. They've opened the door for God to be at work in their life. They've opened the door to the work of the Holy Spirit. They've opened the door that God could heal them and save them and transform them and use them. But I've also seen that door shut when people say, no, can't have that. And you watch unforgiveness permeate that person's mind and heart and soul and life. And folks, I'm not a medical doctor, but I can guarantee you of this. That kind of unforgiveness begins to cripple the life out of people until it finally consumes them. It's like a cancer that eats away at people moment by moment by moment. And I think what Joseph did, he opened the door. He says this to the brothers, do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. So then it was not you who sent me here, but God. You folks might have done the rotten thing of throwing me in a cistern and selling me down to Egypt, but let you realize this. God is the one who used these set of circumstances to not only change my life and your lives, but the life of the entire ancient world. Now think about this. Nobody told Joseph ahead of time how all that was going to work, right? I mean, it's not like somebody came to Joseph and said, here, Joseph, got it right here. Nice document and outline format. Tell you what, here's what's going to happen. You're born to a lousy family. Sorry, buddy. That's just kind of the way that it works. But, you know, they're going to throw you in a hole. Then they're going to talk about your death while you're sitting in the hole as if you weren't there, right? But then they're going to realize, oh, we can't really kill the guy. He's our brother. That's bad. So I got a great idea. Let's sell him. Good idea. So we're going to sell you to some Midianite traders. You're going to head on down to Egypt, and you're going to think that's bad. Just wait. Then you're going to go to this guy's house. His name is Potiphar, and his old lady, she's crazy. She's going to follow you all around because, you know, you're a hottie with a body, and she's going to really like you. And that's not going to work out so good for you, because then they're going to go throw you into prison. And after they throw you into prison, you're going to get passed over, and you shouldn't be in prison in the first place because you didn't really do anything wrong. And by the time you get out of prison, there's going to be this one day, and you're not even going to expect that they're going to bring you before Pharaoh. They're going to say, hey, can't interpret a dream. Can you help us out? You're going to interpret the dream, give them the plan, and everything's going to work out wonderful. You're going to be second in command of all of Egypt. Can you imagine? I am breathless. I imagine Joseph would have been breathless, but that's not the way life works, is it? That's not the way life works. Nobody told him about cisterns and prisons and lousy family. And when you're stuck, folks, it hurts like hell, doesn't it? Yeah, it's horrible. But you know why people want revenge when they're stuck? Because they don't trust God with the results in their life. I know better than you, God, what I need. Now, I'm not saying the feeling of revenge is wrong. I'm just simply saying when you're so consumed with revenge, it's because you don't trust God with the results in your life. And the only way beyond it is to leave your revenge at the doorstep and trust God for the results in your life. Can't control them. Not going to get a roadmap as to how it all works. the biggest thing that we need to realize, folks, is this. God doesn't reveal all the results until the plan is entirely fulfilled. Right? Like, you're not really going to get a glimpse of the results and the impact of your life until you stand with God before him in the resurrection. And then all the pieces are going to fit. If you're trying to make sense of it all in this life, great. Let me know how all that works out for you. Because sometimes you're going to get a glimpse, and there are other times you're only going to be left confused. You know, I think the way that life works is like this. You know, we do the whole Jesus is my pilot or co-pilot. You can figure that out for yourself. But I think it's like riding in a car, and the windshield before you, it's all blacked out. Can't see a thing. But the rear view mirror, you can see 20/20, can't you? 20/20 vision. And so you look in the rearview mirror and you begin to make sense of what it is that's happened. But as far as what's ahead, sure, every once in a while you might be able to poke a pinhole in it and you can see a glimpse. You don't know what's coming next. And it's a good thing. Because if you did, I mean, if I did, I would screw it up. If God came to me and said, hey, Ebel, here's the roadmap for everything, the first thing I would try to do is start trying to do let's make a deal, right? I love part A and C, but B, that's horrible. Clearly, we can work out a deal here, right, God? I mean, you know, not much return there. It sounds pretty painful. It's very risky. And I'm just not sure if we get to C. So how about this, God? How about we do B my way, and then we'll do C your way? And it ain't a Burger King kind of faith, folks. You don't get to have it your way all the time. When you're stuck, be faithful and leave the results up to God. Joseph was a 17-year-old kid with an ego the size of Texas and beyond. And I love Texans. Let's be careful here. I mean, his ego was huge. Ego was huge. And if Joseph would have fulfilled his plan, what would the story be all about? Joseph's glory. But at the end of his life, the story is what? It's about God's glory. It's about God's glory. And by the end of it, Joseph has changed, his brothers have changed, his father's been changed, the Pharaoh has been changed, Egypt has been changed, the whole ancient world has been changed. You tell me who had the better plan. Let me invite the band to come on back up. So how have you been stuck? How are you stuck now in your life, in your family, in your job, in your finances, in your marriage? Have you looked in the rearview mirror to see what it is that God has been doing? Or are you so consumed with what's in front of you? And is there some area of your life that you want revenge? Because here's the funny thing about the example that I've given you. Sure, you can take control of the wheel, but if you can't see what's in front of you, you're going to wreck somebody, and more importantly, I guarantee you're going to wreck yourself in the process. Only God knows the future, people. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Because I imagine if it were in our hands, it'd get pretty messy, wouldn't it? Let's continue to worship this morning. You know, Tanya Brown, to go back to her, was left after her sister's trial with all kinds of feelings that were related to revenge. She was angry, she was hurt, and it began to eat away at her life. In fact, it got so painful, it became so bad that she ended up needing help for her illness. And being right and gaining revenge, folks, is not going to change what's happened, is it? The hard part for Tanya to come to grips was that no matter what, she wasn't going to get her sister back. No amount of revenge was ever going to be able to replace that. And I think that's an important realization for us. You know, folks, listen, you're not always going to get unstuck in the way that you want. Justice is not always going to be served. The scales will not always balance. Karma is a wonderful idea, but let me assure you of this, it is a fairy tale. That's not the way that it works. That's just not the way that it works. The goal is to live. More importantly, to let Christ live in us. A transformation happened in Tanya's life. And here's why and how it happened. She forgave the one allegedly, because the key word is alleged, right? He was proved innocent by a jury of his peers. She forgave OJ. And instead of directing all of that hatred and anger and hurt and all of those kinds of things at plotting revenge against him, Tanya now works with those who suffer from everything from mental illness to those who want vengeance. She redirected all of that energy in a positive, transformative kind of way, and now helps people. And I think that's a huge lesson that Joseph can teach us today. Leaving stuck is all about, at the end, realizing that God gets the glory and we don't need the revenge. And that's a tough lesson to learn. I'm not saying today don't fight for justice, okay? I'm not saying that you don't try to right the wrongs. I'm not saying that you don't stand up for the truth. I'm not saying we do this whole forgive and forget. That's not what I'm talking about. A very good friend of mine once said that forgiveness is about letting go of the other person's throat. I think that's really well said. Right? Doesn't mean you have to forget what happened. It doesn't mean you have to say, oh, it's all good, or my bad, or those kinds of, what is my bad? No, forgiveness is about saying, God, you take that person and you deal with them. Because I'm going to choose to live. I'm going to choose to live. And in that moment, I think you watch what happens on Easter Sunday happen in your life. You're raised from death to new life. And it only happens by the grace of God. You know, I saw this past week, and I love what A.W. Tozer says. He says, we're a holy people called out of darkness to show forth the glory of Almighty God. And I think there is great power in this truth. God is always calling us forth from darkness. God is always calling us forth from the tomb. God is always calling us forth from unforgiveness or hurt or hatred or the desire for revenge. Why? So his glory, his goodness, his grace, his mercy, his greatness, all of those things can be revealed in us and through us. Will we open the door for that to happen? That's the question. Joseph did, and my prayer for you today is this, that whatever hurt, whatever has you stuck, whatever happened, not that you necessarily forget it, but that you simply give it to God and let him heal you and use you. Let's pray.